This episode of Navel Gazing is sponsored by ValleyGivesBack.org. Adding a Valley charity to your estate plan creates a lasting legacy that tells future generations what causes matter to you. Your action will inspire others to follow your lead and make a difference. With a plan gift, you have the power to impact the Valley community forever without affecting your current lifestyle. Learn more at ValleyGivesBack.org, an initiative of the Valley Community Foundation. Plan now, give later, and impact tomorrow at ValleyGivesBack.org.
For hundreds of years, we've brought you the news. Printed the info, we gave you the clues. Owners' profits were always sky high. Changing market now threatens our lives. Post-literation, critical reading, dumbed down nation, signs of inbreeding. TV sucking ideas from our head. Public discourse just about dead. We'll ride the dinosaur. Yeah, ride the dinosaur. Our readers are in the
Hi, welcome to Navel Gazing, the Valley Indies weekly podcast. My name is Eugene Driscoll. I'm a reporter with ValleyIndy.org. You can listen to past episodes of this podcast on iTunes, Libsyn, SoundCloud, and at ValleyIndy.org. Just look for Navel Gazing at the top of the page. This is a solo podcast. Today, Ethan Fry was in the room, but he was busy working. The guest is Seymour Police Chief Michael Metzler, who is retiring in June 2018 after 30 years at the helm of the Seymour Police Department. We talk about his career. He started off in Ansonia in the mid-70s and then transitioned to Seymour in the 80s. So without further ado, here is Chief Metzler. Thank you. So joining me in the Valley Indy office today is Chief Michael Metzler of the Seymour Police Department. Thank you so much for taking the time to be here today.
You're welcome.
And congratulations on your coming soon retirement. When exactly are you retiring?
My last official day is June 30th, 2018.
So we're a little more than a month away.
18 days working.
All right. Oh, okay, 18 days
nobody's
working.
Nobody's counting.
And I should note for our listeners, Chief Metzler is wearing a Hawaiian shirt. He had to put a cigar out. He is ready to... you have an event you're going to be attending right at 11 a.m. After we record this here in Ansonia,
yes,
to mark a police chief who was from Ansonia and killed in the line of duty.
Correct.
So, and let's talk about first, where'd you grow up, Chief? Because we've talked a few times, but I've never really had more than a 10-minute conversation with you.
Newport, Rhode Island.
Oh, really? Okay, so you grew up like on the beach up there?
I lived there. I was about a mile away.
And what type of work did your father do?
My father was an inspector in the Newport Police Department. And then when he retired from there, he went over and took over security for the Navy Underwater Security System.
And brothers and sisters?
My brother is a superintendent of schools in New Hampshire. My sister is a registered nurse, married to a captain, retired in the Navy down in Virginia.
And so did you know from an early age that law enforcement was the thing you wanted to go into, being your father was an inspector?
No, I went to Central Connecticut State and was becoming a physical education instructor. I taught in the Valley, subbed in all over the place, and was waiting for a job. I had the taste of it from my father, obviously, from all the time he was there. And then I needed to do something to bring money into the family, and I took the test for Ansonia, came out first, and it was history after that. So my dream of coaching and teaching and all that stuff kind of went to the wayside. I was doing both for a little bit of time. I was teaching up at Evan O'Brien on a full-time basis, and when the job came up for a detective, I had to make the call, so I made the call.
So you grow up in Rhode Island, yeah. You then come down to Connecticut for college. Then how did you make your way down to the Valley?
I married a Derby girl.
Oh, there you go. All right. I live in Derby.
And I made the deal with her that we would move to the town where whoever got a job first, and she went out the next day and got a job. So that was the end.
Where were you living in those days? Like when?
I was back in Newport. She was here. And okay. It was a long-distance relationship. It was, you know.
Then you get married, and where did you?
We ended up living in Seymour first for a year, and then we moved into Ansonia. I lived up on Wakely Avenue before I bought my home. I live in Ansonia now. Been there since 79.
And what's your wife's name, if I may ask?
Doreen.
And how long have you two been married?
It'll be 44 years in July.
What's the secret to staying married that long?
Being honest.
Okay, all right, that makes sense. That's a good answer.
Yeah, being honest.
And so you were subbing, and so how old were you? This is 40 years ago. How old were you? How old were we talking about?
When I was doing the teaching?
Yeah.
I was 26, 25, 26, doing both. Okay,
and you were married at that time? And then,
oh, yeah. Yeah, married when I was 74.
How many children do you have?
One daughter.
You have one daughter.
And she's a registered nurse in the emergency room in Kent Hospital in Rhode Island.
Okay.
Yeah, she went to Roger Williams.
And so then your first taste of law enforcement was in Ansonia, you said, because you wanted a job that could pay relatively decently and support a family.
I wouldn't call it decently.
Well, compared to Ethan and I.
It was benefits. It was a bunch of things. And I started as a supernumerary here. I did 1 year as a super and then went on as a regular in 77.
A supernumerary, like, I'm not familiar. I mean, I've heard the term, but like, explain.
Part-time.
It was a part-time. Okay.
Yeah, you have all the abilities and responsibilities of a regular officer, at least in Ansonia you did. And what ended up being is that you would, you couldn't work over 40 hours because then you'd be working into the overtime of the other guys. But we were putting in 32 to 40 hours a week as part-timers, all of us. And when the openings came up within the year, we ended up going on, and that was it.
I'm an idiot, but so what years are we talking about there? When you were
I came on as a super in 76.
1976, okay.
Right, and then I became a full-time officer in November 1977. Then I became a detective in 83. I was made acting detective sergeant in 83.
All in Ansonia. Okay,
Then I became the lieutenant in 87 in Ansonia, and then I left for Seymour in 88.
So what was policing like in the Valley in like the late 70s when you first started? I mean, I've only lived up here probably 10, 15 years. What was different about it then?
It was a battle. It was a war. It was a war out there. It was there was
particularly constant, in Ansonia.
Yeah, particularly in Ansonia. There was a lot of bars, a lot of power drinkers. There was a lot of problems in the Olson Drive area. There was a lot of bar fights down at the old pub down the mall down there. It was every night was a battle down here.
Now, explain that there was an old pub. Is that what the radio station was in those days too?
Same area. Same area. It was.
Was it the guys from the radio station?
Where Big Y is, right? Now, okay. In that whole area, there was the big mall there. In the mall was a place called the Pub, and it was just like every night.
Just fights and
stuff.
Oh,
it was fighting every night. It was a battle every night.
And we've heard stories from, I don't know if it's the same time period, but there were basically sort of open-air drug markets going on instead of some of the federally subsidized housing in those days.
Well, in Olson Drive, there was a lot of drug sales, a lot of weapons, things of that nature. We were constantly over there. But I used to be sent there every night, so it's kind of like it was my beat. Okay. I thought at first I was being picked on by the sergeant. And I kind of get a little attitude because I said, here I am, one of the senior officers, and I'm being stuck in Olson Drive walking while the people who were younger than I were driving around in the cars doing stops and stuff. And then one night he sat me down, it was Sergeant Mike Kennedy, and he sat me down and he goes, I said, why are you doing this to me? Why am I always over there? And he goes, because if I put them over there, they're going to get hurt. I went, yeah. He goes, while you're over there, I don't worry about anything. Nothing's going to happen over there while you're there, and nothing's going to happen to you. He said, but if I put them over there, they're going to get hurt. So I do this not for you. I do this for me to make my job easier because I don't have to worry about the projects for the entire night. I went, oh. So when he explained it that way, I kind of understood because I was kind of like his go-to guy. And I went, all right, now I understand. It isn't a personal thing. It isn't punishment. It was you're doing this because you think that I'm the best resource for that area. And it's something I learned from him at that point, that take the personalities out of it and put your best people in the position that they best suit your job. And I never complained again. I never said a word after that.
That's an interesting point, because one thing I was going to ask you about, I know a lot of times, and I don't know if people realize this, but as reporters, you know, we hear stuff all the time. And a lot of times there are conflicts or disputes between like rank and file and administrators in police departments. It's just one of those things. Like in any job, there's the union, and the union are going to it's designed as a check and balance. There's going to be conflict.
Right.
Is that the toughest thing to handle as a police chief, sort of dealing with those personalities and the internal politics? Or
I tried, and people don't believe this, but I tried to take the personalities out of the issues. And when I held people accountable for the things that they did, I did it based on the action and not the individual. That isn't always the case in some departments, but that's how I did it. Some people thought it was personal, but it never was. To me, it was what you did, you're going to be held accountable for, period. That's it. I never let politicians interfere with how I did my job.
Is that difficult? I mean,
that's very difficult. I was fortunate in the fact that I had no contract. I refused to sign a contract because I didn't trust...
Was this when it's Seymour? I'm sorry.
Right, in Seymour. Okay, gotcha. I didn't trust the people that were in charge as far as how they were going to do things. So by not signing a contract, I had more control. And by doing that, they were unable to force me to do things that I didn't want to do and I wouldn't do.
Yeah, what are some, for a listener who doesn't understand, what are the dangers of having, say, politicians dictate police department policy? It might be obvious.
Well, first off, they have no clue what they're doing. They do things for political reasons. Like I was many times, we want to take this guy out. We want you to fire this guy. We want you to do this. No, I'm not going to do that. I'm never going to do that. On my back, my job was to protect the town, then the department, the men and women, and then the community. And that's how I did it. And I wasn't going to let politicians ruin the department with their games. So I took a lot of heat for years. I went 12 years with no raise.
Kidding.
Seymour, there's a certain group in Seymour that was just very, very vile. False comments, false rumors. They did everything under the sun trying to discredit me. I refused to bend, and I wouldn't bend. And I will leave there with my head up with the integrity in place. That being said, it is a difficult thing to do. It really is to keep the politicians out of the day-to-day runnings. You get paid to do the job. Let the chief do the job. You know, that's the way I've always felt.
And then going back to what you had mentioned, policing Olson Drive and kind of the bad old bloody days that we've heard about. What was it about your style of police work, do you think, that made you an effective person to deploy over there?
I treated them fairly, everybody. My father, people laugh at this, but my father told me when I first got into this job, because he knew how I was, he said, you're the kind of guy that's going to run in, take a shot, take a bullet, whatever it is, just so you get yours in. You can't do that. This is what he used to tell me. The suspect has three choices. He can get in the cruiser, he can get in the ambulance, he can get in the hearse. His choice, it's your job to help him fulfill that choice. And people laugh at that, but he said, your family expects you to go home exactly the same way you went in. You're not to take a stab. You're not to take a bullet. It's him or you. It's him. And I always treated him fairly. If you respected me, I respected you. If you wanted to play, game on. Game on.
And in those days, did you have a partner, or were you pretty much, how was that set up?
No, you had individual beats. And Aunt Sonia for years, till the union, which was...
You're using air quotes.
Yeah, union of idiots, went with this ridiculous minimum manpower thing. When I first got here, we had four walking beats, four mobile beats, and a guy at a desk. There was nine people in Ansonia every night, every shift. So there wasn't really much that the Ansonia Police Department could not handle departmentally in the town. When they went down to the five-man minimum, you know, you're putting the officers at risk. It becomes an officer safety issue.
Explain what that is. I mean, I've heard those terms. What does it mean?
It's when we would send a guy out on a call back when it first got on, the east side car would pick up the B3 guy or something, and the hilltop guy would pick up the mall guy, and the west side guy would pick up the Olson Drive guy. So you never went on a call alone. Now you're getting sent to calls alone. You're expected to handle these calls maybe you'll get a backup there in time if they're not tied up. But if you've only got three or four guys on the road, the chances of having a backup become less and less if there's multiple things going on. So if you have, let's just use an example, you got a serious accident, you got two or three guys tied up at the accident, doing traffic, doing investigation, and then you have a domestic, you're sending one guy. And those are just volatile situations, because no matter what side you take,
they're completely unpredictable.
The other one turns on you. So that was the difference between now and then. We had enough people to make sure the officers weren't getting hurt. You're finding more injuries than officers being hurt because there's less officers on the street.
And is that the fact in Seymour too?
I have fought pretty steadily for 30 years to maintain the manpower levels in Seymour. When I got there, it was 25. We now have 41. So I'm a firm believer in making sure the officers are safe and having enough people on the road as much as possible. Are there times when there's injuries and sickness and things like that and brings it down to the minimum? Yeah, I don't like it there. I'd rather have the extra couple of guys. But it is what it is. You know, you deal with what you get. The cards get dealt out the way they are.
And then switching back to Ansonia before we close out, who was the chief in Ansonia in those days?
When I got hired, it was Ed Turgeon. He was the old school type of guy, pretty straightforward, you know, no problems. Then Schumacher came in for a short period of time. And then after that, Sergeant Bacchanal, which was acting chief until Chief McGrath took over. And then when McGrath took over, I think it was in 80, I'm ballpark.
Okay.
From 80 till when I left, Chief was still there. And then shortly after I moved to Seymour, they made the change around 10 to 12 years later. He was there for a long time. I think he was 74, 75 when he retired.
And then you had said you were a detective there?
I was detective sergeant, and I went up to lieutenant. I was second in command in Ansonia when I left.
Were there any major cases that you worked that stand out from your years in Ansonia? I know that's always a tough question to sort of gauge because you don't really catalog them like that. But
there was a lot of incidents, a lot of heavy-duty weapons and guns that we looked down the barrels of and stuff. But I'd say the most, was some of the sex cases that I did with the kids. I had the Hilltop case, which was like over 100 cases. Okay. Which we put one guy away. And then I had another one where a guy was sexually abusing his next-door neighbor's daughter in the house while his wife was there. She didn't even know. And that one meant more to me because very seldom do people around this area say thank you for what you do. And that mother came down and personally thanked me and gave me a letter saying I appreciate what you did for my daughter and my family. And it's those cases that meant more to me than the gun cases and stuff, you know. I mean, I took four guys out in a car with six guns one night alone. So, I mean, that stuff happens regularly. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like an unusual. It was regular. So,
then in terms of people saying thank you, I mean, there's obviously in the last couple of years on the national level, there's been lots written in videos about allegations of police abuse and shootings where people questioned what happened. Nothing has filtered down to the local level that we're aware of, but we have seen people in the Valley. I mean, we see on the Facebook pages, because all the police departments have started to do Facebook pages where they tend to, if the Girl Scouts make cookies and things like that, they'll put that on there. Do you feel there's more community support for law enforcement now in the Valley than there was previously, or are we just...
I think it's more overt, and I say that because I'm noticing that people are dropping off food, pizzas, cookies, baking things. That never occurred very much back then, but we're seeing a lot more of that now. So it seems like things are starting to turn a little bit, which is a good thing. Which is a good thing. These guys, they're out there every day risking their lives, and they like to hear a word thank you once in a while. You know, we know that there's risks, and we know that our lives are on the line on a day-to-day basis. But the general public just takes that for granted is the belief of police officers. They just take it for granted. And when somebody says thank you, or like we just had an individual from the Valley give us $850 for a vest for one of the guys. We've had people donate for the dogs. I mean, matter of fact, that's coming up very shortly. Both dogs were given vests by somebody. some money was collected, and that's going to be, there's a press release going to be done on that, because they just, the vest just came in. So, I mean, those are things that, that mean things, you know what I'm saying? It's, you know, I mean, I had a case up in, it wasn't really a case, but when I worked at Emmett O'Brien, I was given carte blanche to do what I had to do. So if there was narcotics in the school or something like this, they would just say, arrest them, you know. And that was a very strange situation, because here I am teaching, and if there's an incident, they want me to make.
So you were a supernumerary at that time and a teacher, you're
saying? I was
saying.
A teacher. Okay, I was full-time at that time.
Gotcha.
And, I arrested one kid whose father and family was very well known in town, and I made a comment to him. And the comment was, and I say it to my guys too, show me who you hang with and I'll tell you what you are. And I said it to him, and I ran into him when one of the best cops I ever worked with in this town, in Aunt Sonny's history, was John Sweet. Phenomenal man, phenomenal. He just couldn't pass a test. But he should have been up the ladder. And John Sweet's funeral, we're standing there, and he comes over to me, and he's changed. He's his hair shaved.
This is the
same kid.
The kid, okay.
And he goes, I just want to say, that comment you said to me years ago at the school, it resonated. It meant something, and you changed my life. I went, thank you. Yeah. Mm.
Hi, this is Eugene Driscoll, most likely interrupting myself to bring you a message from our sponsor, ValleyGivesBack.org. Adding a Valley charity to your estate plan creates a lasting legacy that tells future generations what causes mattered to you. Your action will inspire others to follow your lead and make a difference. With a planned gift, you have the power to impact the Valley community forever without affecting your current lifestyle. Learn more at valleygivesback.org, an initiative of the Valley Community Foundation. Plan now, give later, impact tomorrow at valleygivesback.org.
You know, that's one of those in the plus column.
Yeah, yeah.
In the plus column.
Keeping it on schools a little bit, I mean, one of the big changes has to be, like, law enforcement is now almost to the point where it's integrated with the school system. And I know, not from anything particularly local, but sometimes police departments can have a hard time dealing with schools, because the schools, the stereotype is they're more... we'll handle this internally. We don't
liberal.
We don't want. Well, I don't know if it's liberal.
It's liberal.
But we're a PR. They don't like bad press. They don't any type of negative publicity.
Let me just put it this way: I coached and taught in Derby when Martin Cromick was there. I coached under Lou DeFlippo. Nothing happened in that school ever. They had total control. There was discipline. There was respect. Those are two words that are no longer in the school system, or in parents. It's all
that's going to make a lot of the listeners in Seymour are going to be like, what?
Yeah, well, I'm not a big fan of participation trophies. Never have been, never will be. I'm a firm believer. You get in life what you earn. You go get it. You work for it. The reason I'm sitting in this seat is because after I got my college degree, I went on and got my master's degree in forensic science. So I didn't just sit back and expect stuff to come to me. I went out and earned it. So when it comes to sports, my father said to me many times, make the team, I'll come to the game. You don't make the team, I'm not coming to watch you sit on the bench. And he coached, I coached, and I always put the 9 best players on the field. This happiness of putting kids out there just to make them feel good about themselves. No, this whole world is built on winners and losers. You have to work hard to get ahead. It shouldn't be just handed to you.
So if there's that participation trophy syndrome out there.
Oh, that's nuts.
Now these kids are, I would assume they're reaching the age where now they're becoming police officers. How do you then, are the young officers terrible or are they?
No, we've been, and knock on wood, we've been very fortunate. We have a phenomenal, Charlie Sherwood from South Central runs one of the most honest, integrity-based systems for vetting out people.
What's South Central?
The South Central Criminal Justice is an agency that performs all of our testing.
Gotcha.
So he does the writtens, he takes care of the orals, he takes care of the physical agilities. So you want to become an officer, you go take these tests through South Central. we only get the people that passed. So the moron, I call them morons, the people that don't study, they just want these things handed to them, they don't make that list. So now I get a list of, out of 700 people that take this test, I get a list of maybe 150 are interested in going to Seymour, because you have to pick the towns you want to go to. Then we go through that, and we have them in for interviews. During the interview process, we ask questions. We get a feel for whether they'll fit into the community or not. White, black, green, purple, doesn't make female, it doesn't bother. If you fit, I want you here. If you don't fit, I don't want you here. So we end up doing that. Then we do our backgrounds. I do not accept people who use drugs. I don't accept people with bad driving records. I don't accept people with arrest records. It's just not going to happen.
Even so, marijuana, which has become in the last couple of years, more culturally accepted.
I don't want to hear it. You want to legalize marijuana, now they want to legalize gambling. What's next? You're going to legalize prostitution? I mean, anything that brings money in for the government, that's what you want to do? Give me a break. So, no, I'm not a drug guy by any stretch of the imagination. Never did it, never wanted to, don't care, and I don't want it in my department, and it won't be there. So, that being said, you vet them out that way. Then you do your background, then you do your psych, then you do your lie detector, the whole nine yards. Then you pick. Now, the last three that we just received, well, the last seven or eight have all been college degrees, top of the classes, doing a great job. We have three in the academy that are going to graduate in June. One is second in the class with a 98.7 average for the year. 98.7. What'd you do, spell her name wrong? You know, I mean, I got three of them all in the 90s. That's the quality of the people that we're hiring in Seymour.
So do you tend to, like, bring in officers and sort of develop them yourself? Like, do you ever hire from other towns?
We have hired a couple. We've met back. We took two from Wallingford last year, and they've both been home runs. Basically because, A, they were both from Seymour.
That was my other question. Is that a good or bad thing?
There's a mixture on it. Obviously, I'm going to be one that says it's best to go out. I'm not from here.
But it creates challenges.
There's multiple challenges. But yeah. We do have several who were born and raised in Seymour, and they've been good. But we have them from Bridgeport to Wallingford to Enfield. We've got them all over the place. I'm not interested where you're from. I'm interested in you and what you're going to bring to the table. We've got two females and a male right now in the school, and they're coming out in June, and they'll be hiring three or four more after that.
And is there any point, this is just totally off the top of my head, but when you bring a new police officer in and they go through the training, they take the test, they pass everything in flying colors, is there any point, like, when have they made it in your eyes when they're on the job, like, in the town of Seymour? Is there any, like,
well, for the people that are born and raised there, it's much easier because they know the people.
Okay.
It's much easier. For someone who doesn't know the area, doesn't know the people, it takes a little while. But I think that by the time you've got three or four years on, you're pretty well versed in the job.
But it takes that long, huh?
You'll hit a myriad of challenges for the list, between the homicides and the rapes and the fatalities and all that. You have to get exposed to everything. Now, fortunately, in Seymour, and I say this honestly, we haven't had the homicides. We haven't had them. I think there's been one, in 30 years, something like that. So we've been very fortunate. When I was down in Ansonia, that was one a year, two a year. Then for a while there was more. So I was exposed to many more things down here. This was a phenomenal training ground for anybody who wanted to go with police work, go to another area. Now, I grabbed an officer from New Haven who had supposedly all this experience and ended up, hadn't done anything. In 25 years, all they did was stand on the corner and do traffic. It was it. They never did
anything. They could hide out. Okay.
Yeah. And
I guess you can't do that in Seymour.
In a small town, and this is the difference between the larger towns and the small towns, a small town officer does everything. They do the fingerprinting, do the processing, they do the evidence, they do everything. In these larger towns, You make the arrest, you hand it over to him, he does the booking. Hmm. He goes over the next one, he does the evidence. No. You do it all. From search warrants to arrest warrants, everything. In these other towns, some of them it's just, oh, hand it over to DB, he'll do it. No. So our offices, when you get an officer from Seymour, after 4 or 5 years, they've more than likely done search warrants, arrest warrants, everything. So that's what I had. That's the advantage I had in Ansonia, because when I first got on, it was, oh, just let him do it. I don't want to do it. The old timers, just let him do it. Give it to him.
The old timers would say that to you?
Or oh, yeah, no, the sergeant. Oh, gotcha. Give it to him. There's a shooting. Give it to him. You know. So I was exposed to things that, I'll give you an example. We had a homicide, and the detective bureau didn't want to come out. And the sergeant gave it to me.
Did they give a reason?
And I was only on a year or two at the time. I called my father in Rhode Island and said, I'm working a homicide. He said, well, what do you mean you're working a homicide? I'm doing a homicide. He goes, well, what do you mean you're working out? You're doing a traffic in front of one? No. You're at the front desk writing the names down at the front of the door? No. I'm running it. He goes, what do they got up there? I said, Dad, you got to tell me what I got to do. So he explained the Mincy warrant, the whole nine yards, and he walked me through it, so I was able to do that.
Your father, you're on your phone with your father.
My father.
And so he was like a police officer from what, like the 50s to the...
50s to the 70s,
okay,
80s.
Gotcha. So, wow. Okay,
yeah, so he was up to 85, he left in...
Holy cow, yeah. Okay.
So he went at 55 and left in 85, so 30 years, and then he went over to the Navy base. But he was very well versed in this stuff. So when I asked him how to do this stuff, and he walked me through it, I was able to get through it. They weren't going to show you anything here. It's just the way they were. It was the mentality of, was, why should I teach the young kid? Let him learn on his own. And it was kind of like that way. Other than John Sweet. John Sweet would do anything in the world for you. So that was a very waking up for me to learn. But the exposure, being able to handle a kidnapping, a robbery, a rape, a murder, burglaries, at only being on 4 or 5 years, and having the experience I had over that period of time, I couldn't get that exposure if I was in a larger town. I wouldn't have seen that stuff for 15, 20 years. Mm-hmm. So Ansonia gave every officer here an opportunity to learn.
And is it still sort of the case in the Valley
towns?
Well,
Ansonia in particular had so many issues that you were forced to be doing these cases because manpower-wise, with all the crime they had down here and all the issues they had, it was always a full-fledged. It never stopped. It never stopped. I mean, Chief McGrath was in the bureau. Chief McGrath would come down every Monday morning and dump 25 cases on my desk. This is for the bureau. Yes, sir. So I would take a look at them, hand them out to the different guys and say, do this one, do that one, do this one, do that one. I mean, one of the smartest guys that I had in Ansonia, and you probably know him, was Bull Griffin.
I've just heard the name, but
yeah, Paul, and very, very articulate, very smart. I would give him 7 or 8 cases on a Monday, and I'd have 7 or 8 warrants on my desk on Wednesday. And McGrath couldn't understand that, but Paul was all business, smart as a whip, knew exactly how to do it, and his warrants were like 5 lines, the whole warrant, not these books.
No, we like the books.
The books are too much.
But let me ask you, that raises an interesting question, and then I want to get back to a school thing. In terms, who are the police officers, and maybe you can't answer this, but you're on your way out, what do you care?
I don't, you don't understand. I don't care.
Okay.
Never
who are
did.
Who are the police officers you respect working in the Valley right now? Who are some of the detectives that are known for doing good work?
Oh, I don't know the detectives that well now that are
in the other departments.
I'm not that well versed in them. I'm hearing a lot of positive things about what's going on in Ansonia right now. I think, was it Lynch and them are running it? I don't know who the
Lieutenant Lynch.
He's done a good job down there. My guys are doing okay. They're doing a good job. I haven't heard anything about the others, to be honest with you. I really don't know.
Because as chief, you're doing your
My focus right now is, and has been for the last year, has been the transition for the new chief and teaching him the ropes, to say the least. Because there's a lot more to this job than numbers, and he's got to learn how to deal with people and how to deal with the union and how to have control and not let the union run the police department, but the police department run the union. You know,
there's always that interplay at work.
Yeah, you have to be in control, because if you lose it, you're done. And I just would never give that up.
And then I just wanted to ask you, I'd asked earlier, but do you have a good working relationship with the school? Do you think?
I believe that the school system right now with Mike Wilson, they're doing a phenomenal job. We're trying to do what we can. I can't go into the details of the security issues, but we're trying to find a way right now. And the first selectman is, I believe, his budget just went through. And I believe he put money in there for an extra officer, so we'll be going to 42. Chief Satkowski will be going to number 42. Okay. And they'll be putting officers in every school. We're trying to do it. We're trying to do what we can. I don't want to call them SROs, but that's probably the safest term. Mm-hmm.
And that's got to be a big change, just the fact that now all of a sudden we have to have armed
guards.
For
years and years, the schools didn't want police officers. They didn't want them in the schools. Didn't want them in the schools. I was not a big advocate of DARE. I thought DARE was too commercialized. You wanted a pen, it was going to cost you so much money per pen for a student. It looked like it was just a moneymaker grabber. So we changed we did our own drug program. And I think with Joe DeNegro started that way back when he was a youth officer. And then that resonated down into Steve Ditria, then it went down to Todd Armagda. Now we don't have a, quote, youth officer. We have detectives working the cases along with the resource officers. So what Paul will do, and I'll say Paul because it's his call now, I'm trying to let him make all the calls and just get used to that so that, you know, the responsibility is on his back coming up, and I want him to make the calls. I mean, I can make them. I don't have a problem making calls. I'll pull a trigger in a heartbeat. But I want him to do it. I want him to get the feel. He's got to build his own persona. So I think that the school system in general will be better served by the way they're going to do this. And I think the more open and I hate to use this word. It's so phony. Transparency. I don't like circles. I just come right across the table and say it the way it is. I think the openness between them and the fact that now they are reporting more crimes in the school than they ever did.
That's what I was trying to get to.
And I think that's a positive thing. I think it's for the safety of the kids in general, all of them, being more honest and being upfront with it. I think that do we want to be up there every day doing their discipline? No. But we will go up there in a heartbeat for actual crimes and stuff. So that I think is being more responsive on the school side. And so I was pleased watching that develop over the last couple of years. A lot of that had to do with the people. Rich Kearns was up there with the security part of it. His relationship with our SROs and our officers was always positive. So I think that that's where it's headed. I think that we're going to get there eventually.
And then how long have you been chief in Seymour?
30 years.
So, so when you look back over these 30 years, what are you most proud of? When you look back, what do you hang your hat on?
All right, here we go.
Don't get emotional.
No.
I'm just kidding.
I went to a training opportunity in Roger Williams where we'd send people up there. And out there, they asked an officer, the chief, I'm not going to mention who it was, what his legacy was. And I just looked at Sarkowski, and I just looked at him, and I said, this ought to be precious, this one. And the guy made the most ridiculous statement I've ever heard. I just want to be known as the chief that people loved. No, that's not a legacy, that's a joke. Legacy is, if you can walk when you walk into a business, whether it be a police or whatever it is, and at the end of your term, you can walk out and it's in a better place than you found it, that's your legacy. So I don't have a problem walking out. I find it that I've raised the bar pretty high in Seymour over the years I've been there, and I can only hope that Paul will raise it higher. you know, that's that. I hope I've done enough to teach him to know how to do it the next level. And I think I've done that.
And then in terms of this transition and the process to pick the next chief, did you have input on there? Did you recommend Deputy Chief Sikowski?
I would stand behind him. I've groomed him. I sent him to the FBI Academy for that purpose. I think that Paul's heart is in the town 100%. I think it's in 100% into the police department. They did the process. They went outside. They got outside chiefs to do the interview process. When the interview process was done, Paul made it into the top four. And that's really what he needed to do. If he's in the top four and everything is equal, then go with the inside guy.
It goes to him.
Yeah, go to the
far,
no. Go to the inside guy. Yeah. Go to the guy from town. If one guy was so far out better, here everybody else and here's this guy, then they would have been remiss not to take that guy. But if everybody's pretty much in the same boat equally, then take the guy from inside. You know, and it's good for the department because now you'll have growth underneath. Don't forget now, for 30 years, there's been no growth.
And that's, and one could argue some of the things that popped up over the years, maybe some of the guy wanted your job.
And I'll be the first to say it. I know that everybody below you says, it's time for that dinosaur to go.
I can do better.
Yeah, I'm better than him and everything else. You know, be careful what you wish for. That's all I can tell you. Be careful what you wish for. When I got the job, it's like Edwin Ansoni when I became lieutenant. I was fighting like crazy to get up there. There was a lot of animus from the Democrats in town. I've always had problems with Democrats for some reason, maybe because they're liberal and I'm not. And they finally got me upstairs. And
Let's talk about Jim Comey.
And I sat.
Go ahead.
And I sat behind that desk and I went, oh my God, what do I do now? Because no one shows you how to do the next job. No one. And the same thing happened when I got into Seymour and I moved over to the chief's job. And I sat at that desk that first day and went, oh my God, ain't nobody I can point to now. It's me. So it's a wake-up call. And no longer can you pass the buck and blame it on the guy below or above. It's you. The buck stops at your desk. You're responsible for what transpires. How you interact with your men and how you hold them accountable is you now. It's not, oh, the chief made me do it. Oh, the chief did this. Oh, the chief's decision. Yeah, it is the chief's decision. But now you're the chief. Now it's your decision. So he's got a tough road to float. He's got a tough road to go because it's a tough job. You got to be thick-skinned. You got to be able to take a lot of happiness. Like I said, 12 years no raises. A lot of negative stuff, lies. A lot of lies and stuff said. And I just smiled and said, you pay me now, you pay me later, but you're going to pay me. You know, that's the way I felt about it. And I'm not going to change my way for a raise. And I'm not going to change what I have to do to fill your need. I have a job to do. I'm going to do that job. And you can keep banging away on me all day, but
Bring it.
That's all I can tell you.
I have one last question. It's at 36 minutes and you got to go.
Yeah.
I'm in no rush.
I don't care.
Well, I don't want you to be late for your...
Oh, I won't be. It's only 5 seconds away.
That's true. But in terms of one thing that I've noticed, and maybe I could be completely wrong here, but police officers getting involved in sort of speaking their politics, whether they're liberal or conservative or whatever there is. Like you had just mentioned, I assume you lean conservative, but...
Yeah, I'm all the way over there.
Is it a good thing, though? Because obviously... I'm independent. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll say, hey, I don't support, I'm not a big fan of Donald Trump.
And so am I.
Like, is there...
I became an independent the moment I took the job in Ansoni.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Which is a smart move.
Because my philosophy was, I have to arrest Democrats and I have to arrest Republicans. I'm not in bed with either one. I'll help you. I'll do what I need to help you. But I'm not going to compromise my position for either one of you. And that's just the way I stood. John O'Toole, he was a pain.
He was
Seymour first time for a while. But he made a comment to the union president at the time and told him, stick with police work because you absolutely, pardon my French, suck at politics. Police officers have no clue how to play politics. And they shouldn't be doing politics. They should stay out of it. But they end up playing it because they think it's their own benefit. They don't understand that the politicians use them. They use them every day. And they don't care about them. They really don't. And stay out of it. Stay out of politics. The only one that should be dealing with the politics is the chief. He's the conduit between them and the police department. And when the people below you get involved in that stuff, you know, I've told First Selectman, keep playing, I'll subpoena you the case. It's as simple as that. I won't put up with it. And if now, I can't tell you that the next guy's going to do that because he has to sign a 3-year contract and his whole career is in the balance of people who control it. And that was the problem with having a contract.
Interesting. So when did you get a contract? Did you finally get one? Was that just a year
ago?
I signed
one when it was time to leave.
So you went all, you had 30 or 27 years, 28 years?
28 and a half years without one.
With no contract.
The only reason I signed one was because I was solidifying what I was going to get when I left.
Retirement benefits.
Otherwise, I'd still be working without a contract and not caring.
That's interesting. And there was never a move to just...
Oh, they changed the charter.
Get rid of you.
Oh, they tried all sorts.
If somebody...
Oh, they tried stuff. They made up stories. They lied. They did it. There was a group in Seymour that was just as bad as the group. It was Democrats, too. In Ansonia, same group, who attacked me on a regular basis and tried to do this. And they had a contract once that was so vile. And they said if I didn't sign it by 12 o'clock on Friday, they were going to fire me. So I said... Fire me. If you think you can do it, fire me. I don't care. You'll be paying me for the rest of my life. Doesn't bother me.
Now, how do you, you have a wife and a daughter. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with sort of that type of pressure? Because that's the type of pressure everyone knows police officers, mm-hmm. or I hope they know, you put their lives on the line every day. But then there's that internal pressure, especially when you're in a management position, of all the stuff we've been talking about. Not that the whole your whole career was negative, but there is that.
How do you
keep that from infecting your personal life?
I tried not to ever bring the job home. Ever. Didn't talk about it at home. She read about it in the paper, the comments.
And that's gonna hurt her.
And she'd get upset, she would just tell me, calm down, just calm down. Because she knows that this is the teddy bear at home that you don't want to let loose at night. Because there's two different animals in this body. And she knows what I was capable of doing when I was irritated. And she was a very, how'd you put it, calming influence on my career. I never brought it home much. I think the only time I really brought it home, brought the job home, I was in Ansonia, and I was doing that Hilltop case, and there was so much sexual stuff going on with these kids, the poor little kids, that when I got home, because my daughter was in a daycare situation, I stripped her and went over her like a fine-tooth comb, because I was concerned that is something happening to her.
Yeah.
And my wife went ballistic on me. And I went, what's this? She goes, you brought the job home. You told me you wouldn't. And I turned and I listened like this. Oh, my God, I did. I did. And I just said, I'm sorry. I backed off. But I was checking my daughter. I was making sure. We had an incident years later when the supernumerary ball was going on. And there was a bunch of us sitting at the table with our wives and stuff, and one wife starts talking about all the cases that her husband's doing. And she looks at my wife and goes, whoa, didn't he tell you about that? No. He doesn't tell you about that? And knowing me, you know how I am, I'm just straight across the table. I says, it's none of her business. It's police work. It stays at the station. I don't need to hear of her because I don't want people saying Mike Metzler's wife said this. My wife doesn't talk about anything. And they were like, whoa, what are you talking about? Other things. you know.
And so now you're retiring at the end of next month.
Right.
Or 18 days, I think it's 18 working days.
18 working days.
So what's next for former chief Metzler?
I'm done. I've had several offers that, you know, were reasonable, you know, but I'm not interested in
working. Law enforcement?
Law enforcement, okay. Teaching,
okay.
Different things. And I just said no. I you know, I don't want to become a professor at UNH. I don't want to go to UNH. Roger Wade. No, done. I did 42 years of this. That's a long haul. I've had a decent run. I can't complain. I give credit for, and I say this honestly, Kurt Miller, for addressing what was done to me over the career when I was in Seymour by the people who were trying to hurt me personally. He took care of that. he made, how would you put it, concessions to address the shortages that I took over the long haul. And he did it very nicely. And I thank him for that personally.
So he was fair to you?
He was more than fair. And I was more than fair to him, as he tells people. He said, the chief left a lot of money on the table. And it was never about money. It's never been about money. I do the job because I like the job.
Are you going to stay in the Valley? Or are you going to move to?
I'm not moving.
You're not moving? No, okay.
No. My daughter wants me to move.
That's what I was.
She wants to go to Rhode Island. And
do you have grandkids?
I got two grandchildren. Okay. But my mother-in-law is 94. She just turned 94 the other day.
Oh, wow.
She lives in Derby. My wife's sister is a doctor. She lives in Derby. My brother-in-law is a lawyer. He's in Derby. And all of my wife's friends. She was the valedictorian at Derby High School in 1969.
Oh, okay. So that's
so
all right.
She's a local girl. She's been here her whole life. I don't think it's fair to her to pull her roots out to go back to Rhode Island. For what? For what? She's comfortable here. I'm comfortable here. I'm enjoying myself. So I'll just, I have two goals. Float in the pool in the summer, sit in a chair with a changer in the winter. Those are attainable goals. I think I can make them.
Yeah. All right. With that, Chief Metzler, thanks so much for coming on this podcast. I do appreciate
your
time.
Not a problem. Not a problem.
Editorial comment for a Still have a fans with